The good news of God's love according to John. Jesus said, "Very truly I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers." Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved, and will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Christ.
Please be seated. Come to church year after year, you may notice that every year, on the second Sunday of the Easter season, the gospel reading is always, and I do mean always, the story about Jesus and the disciple Thomas. In the same way, on the fourth Sunday of the season, the gospel is always a passage taken from the 10th chapter of the Gospel of John. The passage varies from year to year, but it's always John chapter 10. This year we get the opening verses of that chapter, so it might be kind of hard to tell what these words have to do with Easter, but this is the chapter in which Jesus identifies himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. But before Jesus gets to that idea, he identifies himself as the gate through which all true shepherds must pass. His words about shepherds and gatekeepers, thieves and bandits, are in part aimed directly at the religious leaders of Jerusalem, who are starting to openly oppose his ministry and who will eventually call for his death. The words are the conclusion of the story of a man born blind who, after he is healed by Jesus, is then harassed and insulted by those religious leaders because they cannot comprehend or refuse to accept that God is working in their midst. These words of Jesus should caution any leader, religious leaders, business leaders, and especially political leaders. Do we engage in a Christ-like way with the people entrusted to our care? Is Christ the gate through which we pass to reach our flock? These words should also guide anyone who ministers to the poorest and most vulnerable of our neighbors. They should guide all of us in how we treat one another in day-to-day situations and in how we form a faith community. Jesus is the gate that leads to life. Scholars will argue about whether the book of Acts is a realistic or idealistic presentation of events that happened in the city of Jerusalem. Either way, it's a really thought-provoking account. During a religious festival, when the city is packed with pilgrims from all over the Roman Empire, a strange disruption breaks out as people hear the praises of God being proclaimed in their native languages. A curious crowd gathers and hears the Apostle Peter announce that this is an outpouring of God's Holy Spirit linked to the death and resurrection of Jesus. And on this day, a new faith community is born. A community dedicated to prayer and fellowship, prayer in the temple and fellowship at home, a community that spends a lot of time together and shares their belongings to ensure that everyone has what they need. A community that believes the world is being radically transformed and they're watching it happen. Some of the wonders and signs being done by the apostles might include unifying an amazingly diverse community of faith, made up of rich people and poor people, not only from Jerusalem, but from every corner of the empire. Can you imagine the diversity of needs and of opinions in a community to which people are being added every day? It appears that so everyone could stay together in Jerusalem, these believers formed some sort of commune where resources were pooled so that everyone's needs could be met. In doing so, they followed ancient Jewish laws commanding that there be no needy person in a community of faith. But these exciting, euphoric, earliest days of the church did not last very long. Sinful actions and choices soon disrupted things, and then there was persecution from the same religious authorities who had arranged for the death of Jesus. Persecution that scattered this flock and allowed them to plant the seeds of their faith in other cities and towns. But we still hold on to this vision of what is possible within the church, a unity that respects human diversity, in which all people are accepted and all stories are honored, a community that is expecting good things to happen, and that provides for the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of its members. In our own day and age, what do we think a Christian community should be? Do we want it to be truly diverse, or do we want a small amount of diversity that doesn't actually challenge the status quo? Do we want to provide something for the poor, or do we want to end poverty? Do we want to attempt serious discussion of issues and have our thinking challenged, or would we prefer to be comfortable? Do we want to grow as human beings, or do we just want to be left alone? Although we have been working our way through the first letter of Peter, slowly and steadily, week after week, we now start jumping around within the letter, and one reason for that is so we can skip over some of the verses that make us uncomfortable. This is one of those New Testament letters, I'm sorry to say, that tells wives to submit to their husbands, slaves to submit to their masters, and everyone to fear God and obey the emperor. Like the original Christian community in Jerusalem, the community for which this letter was written must have been economically and culturally diverse, including some slaves and some slave owners. It is specifically the household slaves who are to endure when you do right and suffer for it. It is those slaves who are admonished that if you endure when you are beaten for doing wrong, what credit is that? But the letter is also clear that what is true for the most marginalized members of the community should be true for everyone. Very few of us will ever experience physical punishment, justly or unjustly, but we do experience other kinds of pain and mistreatment. The point being made by the author is that Jesus endured outrageous injustice and undeserved suffering. While it is not to be assumed that we will experience the same, if it happens, we are to look to Jesus for guidance in how to react. All followers of Christ, regardless of their economic or social status, are called to defy the world's values of hatred and violence and embrace God's values of humility and peace. Thank you. And we are to endure any suffering that might result from such defiance, trusting that it will benefit others. But we live in a world that is very different from the first century Roman Empire. People who live in a democracy are always obligated to speak and to act for what is right and to not suffer silently and submit to evil. It is only where we lack agency that we may need to quietly endure our suffering. But even in those situations, we have a loving shepherd who guides us and protects us. Alongside the other readings from today, it starts to sound kind of strange that Psalm 23 is so individualistic. The Lord is my shepherd. He leads me. He prepares a table for me. A key part of Christian life is life in community. The Good Shepherd protects individual sheep and brings them together in a flock. Every individual sheep receives the care it needs, and the community is nourished together, even in the presence of opposition. For Psalm 23 to be a truly Christian prayer, I would suggest it should probably be changed to the plural. The Lord is our shepherd. We shall not be in want. The Lord leads us and guides us. We walk through the dark valleys together, trusting in our shepherd's protection. Together, we will dwell in the Lord's house forever. Using Jesus as the gate through which all of our interpersonal relationships are conducted, treating people with love and respect the way Jesus demonstrated, traveling through him in order to come in and go out and find pasture, that is what will lead all of us to our salvation and to enjoy the abundant life that God desires for every one of us.